I'm Sheila Cast, sitting in for Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. If you were offered paid paternity leave, would you take it? Even though more companies are offering the benefit to new fathers, stigma in society and the workplace prevents many fathers from using it. In this hour, we'll look at paid paternity leave and at the changing dynamics of American working families. The United States is one of the wealthiest countries in the world, but it's the only high-income country that does not mandate paid time off. In his State of the Union address, President Obama argued that paid leave is a family issue, not only one for women. He then granted employees at federal agencies up to 6 weeks of paid parental time off. Should federal law require paid family leave? That's next on Midday. First, the news from NPR. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast, sitting in for Dan Rodericks. Thank you for joining us this second hour of our show. American families with a baby on the way, especially if both parents work, face quite a few decisions. Most likely at the top of that list is the question of who will stay at home in the first weeks or months after the child is born. Even though more than 70% of women with children at home are in the workforce, women are far more likely than men to take time off from work to care for a newborn. But that's changing as family dynamics change. In recent years, companies in certain sectors of the economy are starting to offer paid paternity leave to accommodate both men and women. It's not to say all men take it. In fact, stigma in society and in the workplace prevents many men from taking the time they're allotted. In the meantime, the topic of paid family leave is a timely one. In his State of the Union address last week, President Obama argued that paid leave is not only a woman's issue, but a family issue. Following that speech, he signed a memorandum that does allow all employees at federal agencies to take up to 6 weeks of paid parental leave. So today on the show, we'll be examining paid paternity leave from several angles, including the stigma that's associated with it and the impact that taking it can have on the family dynamic. We want to hear also from you, our listeners, this hour. Have you or your partner taken family leave? How did it affect your family? If you didn't take paternity leave, why not? Please give us a call at 410-662-8780 or send us an email with your thoughts. The email is midday@wypr.org. A little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Elizabeth Kennedy, an associate professor of law and social responsibility at Loyola University Maryland's Selinger School of Business, who specializes in labor and employment issues. We'll also talk to Michael Rosten, a senior staff editor for social media at the New York Times, who took paternity leave last year and then wrote about his experiences. But first, right now, we're joined on the line by Claire Kane Miller. Claire Kane Miller is a reporter for the New York Times whose November cover story in the business section on paid paternity leave caught our eye. So, Claire Kane Miller, welcome to Midday.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. Why are we seeing more companies offer paternity leave, and if so, why?
We actually are not seeing more companies offer paternity leave. The share that offer it dropped 5 percentage points from 2010 to 2014. But in certain sectors of the economy, we're seeing more companies offer it. One is in Silicon Valley, which is, of course, famous for its workplace benefits. Facebook, for example, gives new fathers 17 weeks off of paid time, and it's hard to find another company in the United States that's generous. But overall, we're actually seeing fewer companies offer it, even though we're seeing more evidence of how important it is. And, of course, as you mentioned, we're hearing President Obama call for it.
So about what proportion of do we have an estimate of what proportion of companies offer it?
Well, the Family and Medical Leave Act says that all companies with over a certain number of employees have to give any new parent 12 weeks of unpaid time off. Of course, most people can't afford to take that much unpaid time off, and a lot of people don't work at companies big enough to take that. The number of people, only one-third of men in the United States say that they have any option to take leave at all, paid or not. Very, very few companies actually offer paid paternity leave.
Very few. And you said it's actually 5 percentage points lower than it was?
That's right. And President Obama's proposal would offer paid paternity leave for 6 weeks to federal employees. He also is really pushing for that to become national policy. But, of course, there are a lot of hoops that that policy would have to go through before it actually became law.
Why did you decide to look into the issue of paternity leave and write about it for the business section of the New York Times?
I think it's one of the clearest ways that family and workplace dynamics are changing. We're in this situation in the United States where family structures have really changed. As you mentioned, almost three-fourths of women with children work outside the home. So we're no longer in the kind of situation where women are likely to stay home with their children. Yet workplaces have not caught up. Workplaces in the United States still expect that men will be, 110% committed to work and act as the breadwinner. They still expect that women will sort of lean back on the job after they have kids. And these things are actually not happening. So I think paternity leave is an interesting thing to look at as a way in which our families and our workplaces are changing. I also think that the economists and social scientists have begun studying it, and they're finding some really interesting things about it. For a long time, they didn't really study fatherhood because men's main role was as breadwinner, and they're starting to do so and really finding some interesting things.
Like what?
Well, one thing they're finding is that when men take paternity leave, it really makes a difference in their children's lives and also in the lives of their wives. So women whose husbands or partners take paternity leave are much less likely to experience postpartum depression. They're much healthier, and they're much more likely actually to get raises when they go back to work. And when you think about why, it's sort of obvious. If a woman is not the only person in charge of housework and childcare, then she's able to invest a little bit more in her job and get a raise. It's also good for babies. Babies' health improves, and the father's bonds with their babies improve. When you look at men who take paternity leave, 2 years later, they're still more involved in their children's lives, even though that paternity leave was 2 years ago. It really boosts confidence and builds those bonds. But on the other hand, economists are finding that men pay the same price for prioritizing family that women always have. As women, we all have conversations. Are we being mommy tracked? Are we going to lose a raise or be passed over for a promotion because either we're choosing to spend more time at home, or maybe even just because our bosses think we're going to choose to spend more time at home? Men are actually finding the same thing. When they take paternity leave, they really do pay a price in terms of being passed over for promotions or having employers think they're not committed or earning less money.
And do we know about that anecdotally, or has anybody actually tried to measure what the daddy track penalty is?
They have measured that, and what they have found, for example, is that one person who's currently the president of the University of Oregon, Scott Coltrane, who's an economist studying fatherhood, he found that when men reduced their hours for family reasons, they lost 15.5% in earnings over the course of their careers. And that is more than the drop in earnings for women who take time off for family reasons, and it's more than the drop in earnings for men who reduce their hours for other types of reasons.
Tease out for me a bit of what you think makes that happen. I mean, is it in part social attitudes among men that this isn't the manly thing to do, or is it primarily top down from employers who say this is cutting into your productivity, this is cutting into your efficiency at work, and we really don't want to encourage it, even if it's on our policy books?
It seems to be both. When you look, it's really about cultural attitudes, because when you look at the price that women pay for prioritizing family, even if their productivity does not decrease, even if the hours they work when they come back from maternity leave do not decrease, they still pay a price for it. So that tells us that this is really something, an attitude among employers that, hey, if you're going to take this leave when your newborn comes, you're clearly not committed to this job. But what other studies show is that when people come back from a maternity or a paternity leave, they're actually able to be more committed and work more hours because they've gotten over that sleep deprivation. They feel that they've had this time to bond with their child, and they're ready to really commit when they went back to work. So there's really this disconnect between cultural attitudes among employers and really more broadly and what actually happens with employees who are balancing family and work.
Well, I mean, is there a sense that people kind of get a mother almost, as we've been saying, it's more expected that a mother will take that responsibility of staying home with the kid. People don't really see it as optional for her, perhaps. And what you just said made me think that it is seen as a father doesn't really have to take on that responsibility. If he's doing it, he must actually be trying to evade work.
Right. There is some of that attitude. As we all know, a mother needs to physically recover from the process of childbirth. And if she's breastfeeding, she really needs to be in the same place as her infant, at least at the very beginning. So there are some biological realities of why a woman needs to stay home. But those things don't last forever. That's only for a few weeks. And even if a man doesn't have, you know, the physical recovery from childbirth, there are so many other reasons, you know, helping the mother, bonding with the child. An infant needs around-the-clock care. And, you know, people talk about family stability in this country and increasing family bonds, and it seems to be a sure way to do it. Another aspect is that, you know, there are very many more same-sex parents and adoptive parents and foster parents, and the issues of recovering from childbirth are actually not an issue for many of them. You know, say if you have two dads or if you've adopted. And as more employers offer benefits to those types of families, they start to see, okay, maybe actually these other families could also use that kind of support.
What did your reporting tell you about what's going on in companies, in workplaces that are making paternity leave acceptable? What elements do you see in workplaces where paternity leave is actually taking root?
Well, it's interesting because even in workplaces that offer it who have gotten to that point, a lot of men don't take it. So at Facebook, the majority of men don't take those full 17 weeks that I told you that they offer. So I did do some reporting on what happens inside companies to make men take paternity leave or encourage them to. And there are a few clear things. One is speaking about it very openly like it's acceptable. The head of human resources at Facebook said, whenever a man comes in and says, I'm having a baby, she says, okay, let's talk about your four-month leave. She calls it the four-month leave so that it's a given that that's how long people take. Another thing is executives talking about it, saying if someone is out of the office because of paternity leave or family leave, they don't say they're out of the office. They say they are on paternity leave, they are on family leave, and that really, really models to other employees that it's considered acceptable. Executives talking about their own children and time that they've had to take off work to care for their own children and family also models that that's acceptable. So these are some of the things that workplaces are doing to try to change that.
Claire Kane Miller, I really appreciate your walking us through this. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Claire Kane Miller is a reporter at the New York Times. Her cover piece in the Times business section, it was headlined, "The Leave Seldom Taken." We'll have a link to that on the Midday webpage. This is time for our first break, and when we come back, more on paid paternity leave. We'll welcome onto this show Elizabeth Kennedy, an associate professor of law and social responsibility at Loyola University Maryland Selinger School of Business. We'll also talk to New York Times editor Michael Rosten, who took paternity leave and then wrote about it. Stay with us. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast, sitting in for Dan Rodericks. We're talking this hour about paid paternity leave. In a few minutes, we'll talk to Michael Rosten, a senior staff editor for social media at the New York Times, who took paternity leave last year in 2014 and then wrote about his experiences. And we'd like to talk to you. If you have a comment about paternity leave, if you took it and it worked out well for you, or you took it and it didn't work out well, please let us know. Give us a call at 410-662-8780. Or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Joining me now in Studio A is Elizabeth Kennedy. Elizabeth Kennedy is an associate professor of law and social responsibility at Loyola University Maryland's Selinger School of Business. Her area of research is labor and employment. Elizabeth Kennedy, welcome to Midday.
Thank you, Sheila.
So nice to have you here. Why do you think so many men hold back from taking paternity leave?
Well, I think it's interesting. I think, you know, what interests me about this issue relates to my research generally, which kind of explores the gaps between the realities in the workplace and then the ways that our employment and labor laws have kind of built up to support that. And I think there's really two gaps that are going on. So one is the issue you speak about, and Claire Kane Miller really reported on in her research, which is these high-level companies where this paternity leave is offered and men are not taking it due to this stigma. I think the second gap, which is also really interesting and very relevant and coming from the president's State of the Union address, is really that gap between those high-wage workers who even have the ability to make the choice not to take the paternity leave and the millions and millions of workers, men and women, who lack access to even a single day of paid family leave after the birth of the child. So I think really with the issue that Claire Kane Miller was talking about, everything she spoke about in terms of the organizational culture, the peer pressure within a workplace. I've personally worked in law firms that offer very generous paternity leaves, and men don't take it precisely for the reasons that Claire Kane Miller reported.
That it's bad for their careers.
That it's bad for their careers, exactly. You know, they're told this is the benefit. It's on paper. HR will, you know, communicate that to them. And then in a private meeting or even just an offhand casual remark at the water cooler, it's made very clear that we have this, but we don't take it.
Real men don't take it.
Real men don't take it, which affects not only those men and their opportunities to bond with their child, but also to the woman who then is, you know, de facto has to remain home for a longer amount of time, taking her out of the workplace. And then it also sets up this really disparate gender dynamic within that household, not for any sort of insidious reason, but the very practical reality that either parent, man or woman, who is home with a child during that critical newborn stage, bonds with the child, develops the sort of competency and confidence that it takes to be the primary caregiver. That gender dynamic plays out even when both partners have returned to the workplace. So it may not be that the father has an intention that the woman, you know, end up doing more of the child care. It's just the reality that the woman was able to gain those skills more readily than her male partner or same-sex partner because she was the one at home with the baby.
I would think it also sort of sets up a gender dynamic in the workplace if employers are thinking, or maybe not even consciously thinking it, but they expect that women are going to be disappearing from their jobs for several months after they give birth, but they don't expect men to do it, that men will get better assignments at work, they'll be considered more reliable. That becomes a gender-based characteristic in the workplace, or it is, and it doesn't change.
Right, exactly. I mean, the same gender stereotypes then, you know, continue to play out just because of this practical reality that, as Claire Kane Miller talked about, you know, the woman, if we're talking about a biological child, is dealing with the sort of medical impacts of childbirth and is at home. And if that's expected and not in the sort of very affirmative way she spoke about at Facebook in trying to set up a sort of counterculture, a counter dynamic that makes the presumption that the man will be taking the leave. And again, I want to point out that, you know, the ability of men to even have this option or women to have this option is a very small percentage of companies.
And I wanted to get back to that.
Yeah.
I'm glad you did. I mean, you seem to be saying most workers work for firms that don't offer paid leave. So most workers in the United States are either in such small firms that there is no family leave obligation, or the only family leave obligation is the federal law that calls for 12 weeks of unpaid, up to 12 weeks of unpaid leave. And you seem to be saying, if I can draw a conclusion, you can mm-hmm. tell me if I'm wrong, that that's just sort of irrelevant to families that are having a baby.
That the idea of whether or not
unpaid
you can choose this unpaid leave.
What the federal law now requires.
Exactly. I mean, what most workers are looking at is a choice to stay and be paid and stay away from their child, or remain at home and be unpaid and face that, you know, very crushing financial decision that most workers just financially are not able to do so. And, you know, couple that with the lack of, you know, paid supports for childcare, and you often have workers who both can't afford to go to work because there's no childcare that can support them and can't afford to stay home because they won't be paid, which in terms of gender dynamics ends up with women perhaps staying out of the workforce longer than they would have liked to. Not that that isn't a valid choice for women as well, but when they're forced as a financial matter to not be able to remain in the workforce, you know, this has implications not just for that family, but it has implications for that employer. It has implications for our local economy, for our national economy. You know, as you spoke about in the lead up, we're one of the very few handful of nations and the only wealthy nation in the world that doesn't recognize that people are going to have babies. And how do we as a society make it so that this can people can remain competitive, people can remain productive, and employers recognize that, you know, they want to remain have their employees remain in the workplace?
I want to follow up with you on that. But first, I want to bring Michael Rosten into the conversation. Michael Rosten is a senior staff editor for social media at The New York Times. In 2014, he took advantage of the Times policy, the Times company's paid paternity leave policy, and stayed home for 5 weeks with his newborn daughter. He then wrote a series of stories about his experiences for the Times blog Motherload, which is how he came to our attention. Is Michael Rosten with us on the phone?
Oh, hi there. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to Midday. We've been talking about the stigma that sometimes hits fathers when they take paternity leave. Did you struggle with your decision to take it?
No, I don't think it was a struggle for me at all. In fact, here at the Times, it was just a fortuitous timing that allowed me to take paid leave. We had, you know, unpaid leave policies that were available for fathers, and I had been, you know, hoarding up vacation time, you know, throughout the, you know, the balance of 2013, expecting that I was going to need to have as much as possible at the end of the year when Ruby was born, but you know, unfortunately, about a month before she was born, they decided to institute this policy of paid leave for fathers.
A month before?
Yes. I mean, it was very good timing for me, and I think that really sent a message around this place, at least, that, you know, it's something that, you know, fathers and mothers should feel like they have the ability to do.
And do I understand correctly, you took 5 weeks?
Yeah, I took a couple of weeks after she was born, including vacation time, and then after my wife went back to work, I took 5 weeks at home with her on my own.
What did that? What did taking that time off mean to you?
Well, I think the most important thing about taking paternity leave was that it gave me a lot more confidence in my parenting abilities. Up until the moment I was on paternity leave, for instance, I had never had to give my daughter a bath on her own, things like that. It's always sort of been a, you know, collaborative team exercise between my wife and I. And ever since I've been on paternity leave and had to sort of deal with the issue of how do you deal with the baby on an all-day basis without somebody necessarily coming in to take over for you, I found myself just a lot more confident in my ability to you know, deal with anything that I was confronted with. And, you know, and when my wife has a weekly evening engagement that she needs to go off to, I don't really flinch anymore at the prospect of feeding Ruby, getting her ready for bed, giving her a bath, all of those things. I just do it. And I think that there are a lot of fathers out there potentially who might feel that it's a little bit of a struggle just to do these things because they don't do them on their own. And having some of that independence really helped me feel more comfortable as a parent than I might have felt in the months you know, before I was on that paternity leave.
And then what was it like when you went back to work? First of all, what was it like at work?
Oh, well, I think it was sort of a unique situation. One of my managers and very close coworkers both had children of their own right around the same time. So I think if anything else, the fact that I was on sort of a shorter leave than they were as new mothers meant that I was very much welcomed back. They were just very happy to have me back the month that I got back. And, you know, I think that it sort of is illustrative of how the age of the ages of the team you're on can really make a difference in terms of how something like paternity leave is received when a lot of other people around you are also taking time off to, you know, deal with you know, the birth of a child and to deal with early child rearing. I think that it just becomes a little more of an expectation that people around you will be doing it, whereas perhaps if there are different age levels in a workplace, it might lead to other people feeling like there isn't really a level playing field anymore.
Elizabeth Kennedy is nodding her head as you speak. Elizabeth, is there something you'd like to talk to Michael about?
Well, I think Michael is absolutely right in that the sort of very particular sort of age dynamic, generational specifics of a workplace play a big part in this, and that if you have employers who were of a generation, frankly, where this wasn't even contemplated, you know, taking any time off around the birth of your child, there can be a bit of a, well, we didn't do that, and we didn't have that.
And we turned out okay.
And we turned out okay, and we're not bad fathers, and no one's saying that. But I think we're seeing, especially in workplace flexibility generally, you know, millennials, Generation Y, they're looking for a workplace that's going to be more family friendly. And that, you know, encompasses a whole host of workplace benefits, one of which is paternity leave and family leave. So I think Michael is absolutely right. The particular makeup of your workplace is going to play a part in that organizational culture that either supports or discourages the use of this leave or even the providing of this type of leave at all.
Listeners, we'd like to know what you think about paternity leave or family leave in general, whether you've used it, whether it's worked out well, whether you've used it and sort of regret having used it. We'd like to hear about this. Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We're talking to Michael Rosten, a New York Times editor who took paternity leave last year, and with Elizabeth Kennedy, Associate Professor of Law and Social Responsibility at Loyola University, Maryland's Selinger School of Business. So, Michael, at work, you didn't feel that you got any repercussions when you came back. Did you go through withdrawal not being home, not being there with Ruby every day?
Oh, a little bit, but I also, to a certain extent, you know, realized what a challenge it is and how much work it is to be at home with a child full time. It really is a full time job, and trying to find some balance in your life between being, you know, a productive, you know, member of the workforce and also, you know, being a happy, healthy parent was something that I was looking forward to getting back to. I think one of the things that I wrote about was that, you know, our first lady, the wife of Mayor de Blasio here in New York, she got a lot of flack for saying that being a parent was very difficult for her because she just couldn't completely devote herself to being a parent. But I thought it was, you know, some important honesty to acknowledge that for a lot of us, especially those of us who maybe don't have, you know, children when we are in an earlier stage of adulthood, but have had a lot of years.
I should ask now that you've broached it. I should ask how old you are.
Oh well, I'm in my late 30s at this stage.
Okay, so I'm sorry. You were saying.
Yeah, and you know, I think that, you know, because I was, you know, 35 or so when Ruby was first born, I had had, you know, quite a lot of life before her, quite a lot of, you know, social freedom, a lot of, you know, employment opportunity that I had pursued. And I think I really felt that I needed a little more balance in my life and just couldn't imagine myself being at home full time. You know, that's not to say that it isn't an amazing experience to, you know, watch your child develop in real time. There's just a lot of things that you understand about how a child, you know, changes from day to day and week to week that you only see when you're in the middle of it, and, you know, aren't just experiencing secondhand, you know, when you come home at the end of the day. And I think that was you know, a real benefit for me and something that I certainly miss every day when I'm back at work.
Was there something about it, aside from just how exhausting it was, that surprised you about the experience of taking paternity leave?
Oh, I don't know if I was too surprised by anything, but I really was. I think that there was always sort of this late afternoon lull that I reached where, you know, she was sort of at her, you know, peak crazy hours. We sort of call them the witching hours around my house. And I was sort of at my most tired and most felt like I needed a nap and maybe couldn't get one earlier in the day because, you know, there were so many little things to attend to. And I could really see how, you know, when you come home at the end of the day, it isn't enough just to imagine that, you know, everything is great now. And, you know, you can just sort of hand off the responsibilities to someone else. There really is sort of this 24-hour experience when you're raising a child and staying home from it. And it really did just sort of reinforce to me how much, you know, respect we should have for parents who are staying at home and not necessarily in the workforce, as economists would define it.
What advice would you give other New York Times employees who are trying to figure out what to do after their baby is born?
Oh, I've certainly had a couple of, male colleagues who have tried to take advantage of this policy, since and have tried to figure it out. And I've said, you know, really, you should take the opportunity because, you might not get to write a few articles, you might not get to be involved in some important news events, but, being home with your child is just a really beneficial experience that's, you know, good for you and good for the child and good for everyone else in your family. And so I've always said that, you know, it's just good to have a frank conversation with, your manager about, why you should take this opportunity now that it's available to you. You know, and I mean, the interesting thing is there are other people around the Times who have taken different approaches to it. And, one of my colleagues, I think he used the policy so that he could just sort of have a four-day work week. And instead, he just sort of took every Friday off for about a year. He was able to sort of structure his paternity leave in that fashion where he could sort of, stretch it out and have, certain days of the week that he was home with his son. And, I think that trying to find that flexible arrangement that, works best for you and also, works for your managers might be, a good way to, do this that might make you feel comfortable about how it's affecting your career.
Michael Rostin, I appreciate you talking to us. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me on your show.
Michael Rostin is a senior staff editor for social media at the New York Times, who wrote in the Times blog Motherload about the paternity leave he took last year when Ruby was born. We have to take another break here. When we come back, more on paid paternity leave with Elizabeth Kennedy, Associate Professor of Law and Social Responsibility at Loyola University Maryland's Selinger School of Business. If you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call, 410-662-8780, or from anywhere in the country on our toll-free number, 866-661-9309, or send us an email at midday at wypr.org. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking this hour about paid paternity leave. If you'd like to join our conversation, please give us a call, 410-662-8780, or anywhere in the country on our toll-free line, 866-661-9309, or send us an email at midday at wypr.org. With me in Studio A is Elizabeth Kennedy, Associate Professor of Law and Social Responsibility at Loyola University Maryland's Selinger School of Business. Elizabeth, I want to get back to something you mentioned a few minutes ago about the United States being the only advanced industrialized country that does not require paid family leave. As an American who's sort of steeped in this economy and used to what the restrictions and practices are, how do companies in other countries compete economically with such much more generous family leave policies? How does it work economically?
Well, economically, and we see this in our own country among those companies that voluntarily offer paid leave. Companies in this country recognize that by providing paid leave like this, along with a panoply of other benefits, they're able to decrease turnover within their workplace, which decreases costs. They're able to retain workers long term. They boost morale, boost productivity. So it's not just this, lump sum cost of covering for workers who are out on leave. I think the concerns you hear from most employers are, I'm going to be understaffed. It's going to be too costly to implement. It's going to be too it's going to be too confusing to try to apply a policy like this within my workplace. I would direct those companies to the list of companies in this country and here in Baltimore who provide these voluntarily because they've seen that not only is it good for families, but it's also good for their workplaces. And there are companies, many of whom have been studied by social scientists, by economists, by lawyers, who've really demonstrated that investing in your employees by either paying them more, providing them more competitive benefits, allows you a competitive advantage against your competitors. It's counterintuitive, right? For the same reason you just asked. You know, most people see this. If you were to just look at it in a black and white, here's the cost of this, that would be an incorrect accounting. It wouldn't be accounting for all of the net positives that a company and an economy, as you mentioned, you know, either your local economy here in Baltimore or our national GDP in terms of productivity in setting the stage for workers to both retain their jobs, remain in their jobs, remain satisfied with their jobs, and incentivized to sort of be more productive in the workplace.
We got an email from Tom. I don't know where Tom is listening, but he writes, I work for a company that offers a policy of 6 weeks paid leave for women, actually 6 weeks of disability payments, followed by 6 weeks of half-time work for full-time pay, paid part-time FMLA, family medical leave. Men, Tom writes, men are offered nothing. And he asks, what are the legal requirements or rules for offering parental leave? I understand the 6 weeks of paid leave during the disability period. New mothers need to physically recover. But the 6 weeks disability period, is it legal to differentiate leave based on gender? Is this sort of gender discrimination common? What about adoptive parents versus biological parents? All those questions from Tom. And since you're faculty at the law school, yes, I throw them all to you, Elizabeth Kennedy.
So Tom asked really great questions. And the questions he's asking hit go really to the heart of the issue here, both in Maryland, where I'm presuming he's calling from, and nationwide about what is it that we need to provide in terms of paid leave. Currently, as he notes, you know, there is no legal obligation here in Maryland or at the federal level for any type of paid leave. Now, this is something a lot of folks don't even understand and they don't appreciate fully until they are expecting a child, until they realize, oh, you know, oh my goodness, this really means that there is nothing guaranteed, not a single day, even for a woman who's just given birth to receive pay. Here in Maryland in May, the governor signed the Maryland Parental Leave Act, which tries to at least reach the gap of workers that perhaps Tom works in a workplace where the Family Medical Leave Act doesn't apply. The Family Medical Leave Act, a federal law, applies only to those workplaces with 50 or more employees. The employee must have been working for full time for a year. And in that case, they would be eligible, in his case, when he's referring to the 6 weeks or the 12 weeks, they'd be eligible for 12 weeks unpaid. If, however, you're working in a smaller workplace, as most workers do, about 40% of workers in this country, up until this passage of the Maryland law, you were out of luck. With the new law, it does not, however, as Tom accurately notes, it doesn't compel an employer to provide any type of paid leave. So since May, his workplace likely should provide, provided he's been there for a full year, some type of unpaid leave for 6 weeks. He's correct in that under the disability insurance, I mean, that 6 weeks is kind of similar to what we're seeing in different states across the country who are starting to experiment with paid parental leave. So states like California, Rhode Island, New Jersey, in the same way that I think many of your listeners will be familiar with unemployment insurance or disability, where it's a payroll deduction. So it's not really that employers themselves are providing the leave. It's that employees are having part of their wages deducted, placed into a bank, which they can draw upon following the birth or, as he notes, you know, the adoption of a child. Some of these laws are, you know, their first steps. We thought the Family Medical Leave Act was going to be a first step. The problem is, since the early 90s when it was passed, there haven't been those second, third, fourth steps. So only in, you know, the last couple of years are we starting to see at the state level measures to get at what Tom is looking for, which is this sort of gender equity within the workplace, not only to allow women to stay home, but men to stay home as well, for all these reasons that these speakers have been talking about, and then also for the adoption or fostering of a child, recognizing, again, not only the changing dynamics within the workplace, but the changing composition of families.
We've got Katie on the line from Frederick. Katie, you're new to Maryland from California, is that right?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, my first two children, we had the luxury of living in California, and I received paid leave there. And when I moved to Maryland, got pregnant with our third child, and then was searching and trying to figure out, okay, now I'm looking for how I'm going to get paid, and learned that I wasn't going to receive any payment during that leave. My husband and I frantically were able to save up for some 6 weeks in my 6 week period so that I could stay home with our third child for just those 6 weeks. But my question is just, you know, what can we do? Because the difference between going to work at 12 weeks and having that financial cushion that I could be fully present for our first two children, and then the difference between the third one. I mean, I just would really want that for all families and all women. And so what can we do at a local level to kind of get something going here in Maryland similar to what is in California maybe?
Elizabeth? That's a great question. It resonates with me because I also have three young children. And in our family, we had three radically different paternity leave situations. With our first child, we were in New York. My husband, actually, he's a lawyer as well. He worked for the Legal Aid Society. They have a labor union and a contract that provided 2 months of paid paternity leave, which is just, you know, incredible. He stayed home full time for 2 months with me together. We had all of that great bonding that we heard from Michael and learning how to change the diapers and do the baths and gain that confidence. My husband became the expert swaddler. And then we moved here. He was at a small firm that offered zero and only 1 week of paid vacation a year. So he scrimped and saved that whole year to be able to use 1 week. He felt it was after about 4 months when I was back at work and he had to take the baby while I was in D.C. for a meeting. He said, I think I just bonded with our child, you know, after 4 months.
Wow.
The third child, he had his own small firm and he was his own boss. He had unlimited parental leave. Obviously, he was the boss, but it was all unpaid. And every single hour he had to choose, should I be devoting this to the family and my child, or should I be working and billing and supporting my family financially? So I'm with the caller that, you know, it really should be not up to the whim and, you know, whimsy of what particular employment situation you're in, but rather something you can plan for that should be guaranteed to all families, not just those at these, you know, high level Facebook, you know, the tech industry, law and accounting, but really all workers here in Maryland. So there's a number of things we can do. I think right now it's a really exciting time for this issue. Many amazing folks have been working on this, along with the issues around paid sick leave. So we're seeing both of these things come to national attention, especially in the last weeks. So there's several pieces of federal legislation that are in the works. President Obama has committed funds to states to start more state experiments with paid parental leave so we can lobby our federal legislators. Working here in Baltimore City, I saw that in Pittsburgh last week, they have just announced that they're going to be providing 6 weeks paid leave to Pittsburgh city workers. You know, municipal workers, federal workers, up until recently, most have not had access to paid leave. So we're seeing movement at the city level, the state levels, and at the national level. So,
do you know of movement in the Maryland General Assembly?
I don't know of anything currently in the Maryland General Assembly outside of the Paid Sick Leave Act, which is moving forward. But that would certainly be one to, you know, start making noise around in order to push in Annapolis.
Yeah. I'd like to tell Katie, and I say this not being adept at Midday's Facebook page, but we should put something up there to see whether we can get some comments, and you can see which state legislators are interested in making something happen in this regard. Another email we got from Rob in Baltimore. And by the way, we're here talking to Elizabeth Kennedy. I misspoke a few minutes ago. I called her a professor in the law school. She is a professor of law and social responsibility in the business school at Loyola University, Maryland. You can be part of this conversation if you call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Pittsburgh, and one of the emails we got was from Rob in Baltimore, who says who raises the distinction with sick leave. He says, I think people get more consideration for taking leave for an illness than for the birth or adoption of a child. Do you know if careers suffer more from taking sick leave the same as taking maternity or paternity leave? Do you have any idea about that, Elizabeth?
I don't. I mean, it's a really good question because these two are so related, right? They're both recognizing these very basic facts, which are that everybody gets sick. Not everybody has a child, but, you know, many people do have a child. And up till now, really most of the emphasis within the employment law world has been pushed out to a very individualistic solution, right? So you as the individual, our last caller, you're now here in Maryland. You've got to scramble. You've got to piece it together. You've got to complete a patchwork of care and time and vacation time and sick time. It's the same thing with sick leave. We've seen, again, in those industries where employers have voluntarily provided benefits like paid sick leave, they've reduced turnover, they've increased morale, they've increased productivity. Companies where they've offered unlimited sick leave have actually seen workers take less sick leave during any given period than those where it's a small amount or not offered at all. So, when employees have the flexibility and the ability to take care of themselves and take care of their families, in general, these things are good not only for the families, but the business and the economy. So I think I couldn't say whether workers are impacted more with paid sick leave or with taking sick leave versus paternity or maternity leave. But certainly, I think in cases where people are using these just to address these sort of basic human needs, there shouldn't be a distinction made.
We have just a couple minutes, and I want to hear from Jay Steinmetz, who's on the phone. He's a small business person and a member of the Maryland Small Business Commission. Jay?
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I've spoken to a lot of businesses in many different variety of sizes about this issue and, about other issues in similar fashion. The perception that I've had, as well as other people, mostly the small businesses have had, is they really want to have ownership of the issue themselves, that some of these companies say, we absolutely want to do this. Other companies said, we can't afford to do this. And one individual in particular said to me, before you make an adjustment of such a type to mandate businesses, the impact has to be defined on creating what's called a baseline. You have to define, for instance, most people don't realize that the state of Maryland has a $13 billion trade deficit. In the last few years, we've seen steel mills and automotive factories close for call centers and casinos. In the end, we're exacerbating our inability to provide a baseline of a trade, at least a flat trade situation where cash is not leaving the state. And I think it's going to be important before we implement additional policies to put additional constraints. We're going to see a few more factories close in the next few years, and those jobs and the supporting jobs around them brought in the highest value wages of any type of blue collar business.
So I have to sort of leap to a conclusion here because we're almost out of time, Jay. You're saying basically Maryland's economy is not in a shape where its companies can offer paid leave, in your view.
This is exactly why we have a tax loop. We have a tax deficit because the people cannot pay the taxes into the system if they're not making the money.
Jay, I appreciate your perspective. Let me give Elizabeth Kennedy just a couple of seconds to respond to it.
I think our economy can't afford not to provide these kinds of benefits and to recognize the reality of our changing workplace. Just as the caller suggested, our workplace has changed. We need to change to keep pace.
Jay, I appreciate your calling. You obviously have opened up a debate that should continue, and I appreciate Elizabeth Kennedy from Loyola University Maryland being part of this conversation also. And I appreciate your participation, listeners. Thank you for being part of Midday today. This is WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass sitting in for Dan Rodericks.
Midday senior producer is Nikki Gamer. The producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producer is Michael Himowitz. Our interns are Carrie DeSantis, David Richmond, and Marjorie Goodman. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcast and live streaming is available at wypr.org. Dan Rodrick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.